And welcome to this week's episode of Series 2, Unsure to Unstoppable. Today I'm going to be joined by Ailey Sutherland. Now Ailey is half of, or a third of now, the RFA team, so Christian's partner. And Ailey was my coach. She joined RFA maybe like the last year and a half or something of like the time that I was with them. So Ailey's Unsure to Unstoppable story is so powerful, which is why I wanted to bring her on the podcast. I'll let her tell you the story, but it's effectively along the lines of she was anorexic, was hospitalised through the Mental Health Act, with her anorexia, and now she lives and breathes health, fitness, wellness. She runs marathons, she trains like an absolute savage. She has an incredible relationship with food, and I suppose it's such an important message to send to people because it just because you're in a space at the moment where things are you're struggling with whatever that is, like you can overcome it. And she is an absolute pinnacle of like you can overcome or certainly at least manage. And obviously, Ailey will tell your story. Of that journey. So I'm excited to welcome her on. It is going to be a very powerful, very emotional, very deep one today. So I will be back on in a few seconds with Ailey. See you soon. I am back and I'm joined with Ailey. So happy to see her. And she's all the way in Bali. Do you know, I was recording with Ross yesterday and he's in France. I'm recording like around the world just now. I'm just going to go straight to it because obviously I've already done the wee kind of intro. Thank you so much for joining me as well because I know that Bali, I don't even know what time it is over there, but I know that you're obviously a busy gal and you've only not long got there. So thank you so much for joining us. I'll just get straight to it. For those of you who don't know you yet, can you share a little bit about who you are today and what life looks like you right now, what looks for you right now?
Okay, well, I'm Ailey. I am 30, about to be 31 next week, actually, a week today. I'm currently in Bali, me and my partner Christian. I think you actually had him on the podcast last week, so I don't know if that
Yeah.
episode's out yet or not, but we put our house up for rent in November and decided to pursue our dream to travel the world ever since me and Christian met. It's something that we always talked about, and then we always convinced ourselves that we couldn't do it because at the time I was a hairdresser. Christian worked in a gym. He was like, my job's here in person. I have to be here to train people. And we just kind of accepted that and tolerated that for a while. And then through lockdown, Christian's business went online kind of accidentally, but it kind of happened for the best when he realized actually there's so much potential for me. But at this point, I had then given up hairdressing and was working in an office. So I was still tied to a job. And then eventually I became a coach. Now me and Christian have a business together. I had my own business, then we merged businesses, and after kind of going on, I don't know if you'd call it holidays, but it was like month-long holidays where we were working and traveling at the same time, the two of us were like, why are we not just doing this all the time? This is stupid. We spend so much money when actually we could just give up our house and do this. So now we've got a business together. We just got engaged last week and we're traveling the world. So we're here in Bali for 2 months.
It's amazing. It's honestly amazing, like the journey that you've been on, even in the short time that I've known you guys, it's incredible. So you have been on such a powerful journey. Could you take us back to where it all began with your struggles, and around like kind of food and body image and all that sort of stuff?
Cool. How far back do you want me to go?
You go as far back as you like.
Cool. So I'll go back to I was maybe about 18. Well, when I was at school, I loved fitness. I was on every single team. I was never that good at anything, but I was always like all right at everything. And I just really enjoyed like exercise. I was in the hockey team. I played for the school. I played for North Ayrshire. I was in the local swimming club. I was on the cross country team. I was in the basketball team. I was also in the cheerleading team. So I used to cheerlead for the basketball and then go and play basketball. I was in the badminton team. I did Highland dancing. I actually did it competitively. Highland dancing. So yeah, like I was in about everything. The one thing that I wasn't really that into though, that actually I'm really into now, was running. It was the one thing that I said that I wasn't that good at school, but I just had a real passion for exercise, had no real knowledge of nutrition. I was the kind of person that used to go to dancing on a Saturday and come home and then be like, well, I've been at dancing for 2 hours, so I can have 2 pot noodles for my lunch. Like that sound. And then as I started reaching 18, getting older, I'd left school, I went to college, started drinking a bit more, getting out with my friends a bit more, had dropped off of obviously my dancing, my swimming and everything, just with like situation with taking on a part-time job. And I started putting on a bit of weight, and my mum had suggested to me, why don't you go and join the gym? So I signed up to a local gym, started losing a bit of weight, was starting to feel really good about myself. But then it was a bodybuilding gym, and I was encouraged to go and compete in a bodybuilding competition. And at the time, I was like, oh my God, these people like me. Like, they're saying I should do it. And I agreed to do it. Nobody was forcing me, by the way. Like, this was totally all off my own back. But I said yeah to doing it when I didn't really understand the full concept of what was involved in it, the pressure, how it was going to affect my relationship with food, with myself. And I prepped for a bodybuilding show that I actually got all the way up to the day before competing and then pulled out of, because I was like, why am I doing this? Like, this so isn't me. If you'd seen like the videos of me trying to pose and stuff, like, you'd laugh. Like, you know me, Dawn, I'm quite goofy. Like, actually posting my Instagram story earlier on that I had my shorts on back to front all day, and Shisha never even told me he knew, right? So I'm like so goofy. I'm like not the kind of person that would fit well in the bodybuilding world. And there's nothing wrong with bodybuilding if you're approaching it from the right place and you know what you're getting yourself into, fair enough. But I didn't anyway. Off the back end of not doing this bodybuilding show, that kind of then spiraled my poor relationship with food, with my body. And kind of long story short, I went through a battle of like years of having bulimia, binge eating, under eating, being stuck in cycles to a point where it was really, really bad. Like I used to actually drive to work the time I worked in an office with my best friend, but some days we would be on different shifts and we would travel separately. And I used to look forward to the days that we weren't traveling to work together, because it meant that I could stop at every shop, every garage on the way home. I'd eat packets of bagels, full share packets of crisps, chocolate bars, packets of sandwiches. I'd go to McDonald's through the KFC drive-through, full boxes of Greg's donuts. I'd be crying whilst I was doing it, but there was a part of me that just couldn't stop. And I kind of got to a point where I almost accepted that that was just how I was going to be. And then, kind of like, come a few years later, we hit lockdown. And when lockdown happened, it was almost like something hit me that I was like, oh my God, I can't hide this anymore. We're stuck in the house, everyone can see. Me and Shishan at this point have been together for maybe 4 years, I think. Don't quote me exactly on that. We've been together for 9 years now. So if you do the maths on that, but roughly, but anyway, at the time, like, he still had no idea. Well, he says now, looking back, he did have an idea, because I would always kind of yo-yo in and out of shape. And when I say yo-yo in and out of shape, I never got overweight. Like, I was probably like I'd go from being like very, very like noticeably lean and tiny to being like kind of like soft and just not looking like myself, to then being like noticeably underweight again. But anyway, anytime I tried to bring it up to him, anytime he tried to bring it up to me, I would be so convicted that I was all good. He'd see me eating meals out, he'd see me eating meals in the house, that he'd be like, all right, okay, and he wouldn't really question it. So lockdown happened, and that kind of then forced me to be like, oh my God, like I am exposed here. I've got no way to hide this, because I used to do hairdressing on the side, so I could kid on that I'd had dinner when I was out doing hairdressing after work. It was very, very easy for me to hide it. If I was going to Christian's, I'd say I'd had dinner at my mum's. If I was going to my mum's, I'd say that I'd already had dinner at Christian's. So lockdown happened, and obviously I went into full-scale panic mode. But at the same time, I also seen this video of this girl who was making herself sick and she died, and that also scared me. So I decided, because I'd never been comfortable talking about it, that rather than actually reach out and ask for help, that I was going to fix the problem by myself. Roll on, full-scale anorexia, because I just started eating. And when I say anorexia, people think that I wasn't eating anything. I started eating 1,200 calories a day, every single day. Like, I literally committed to the skinny dream. But at the same time, I was walking 30,000 steps a day, I was training twice a day. So like, to put that into perspective now, I eat between like 2,500, 3,000 calories, and I'm probably doing less movement sometimes than what I was during lockdown, which is mental when I think back. I'm like, how did I ever survive? I was like a zombie. But it got so bad to the point where I actually got hospitalized. I went into well, firstly, I went into ICU. So basically, when I eventually seen the doctor, I was 32 kilograms, and the doctor had said to me, "You need to go to hospital right now." So I got sent to the mental health hospital in North Ayrshire because we don't have a eating disorder unit there in North Ayrshire. And then when I got there, they were basically, the reason why I had to go into hospital was because when I started to eat more food again, there was a chance I was at risk of refeeding syndrome, which basically means that because you're being so malnourished, when you start eating again, your organs can actually start to shut down because of electrolyte imbalances. Your body goes into panic, you can have a heart attack. So basically, I had to be monitored when I started eating food again. But basically, when I got to the hospital and they checked my heart rate and all my started looking over my vitals, they realized that my body was actually already shutting itself down, and they weren't able to refeed me safely in the mental health hospital. So I then got rushed to ICU. I spent 3 days in ICU, and then I spent, I think, another week in the gastro ward, but also attached up to the cardiac ward. So for my heart and for my liver, I had to go and get like a biopsy in my liver. I remember the doctor kept saying to me, "Have you been taking ecstasy or any kind of drugs?" And I was like, "No." And he was like, they couldn't understand what was wrong with my liver because they said it was the worst that they'd ever seen a liver of anyone with like an eating disorder. And basically, when I eventually got the test back, and after I'd been eaten and I was more nourished, my liver was back to normal. And they said that actually it was just such bad malnourishment, but to the point that they thought that it was because my liver was so chemically imbalanced, they thought that it had been caused by me taking drugs at the time. So yeah, I got out of ICU, and then I spent another 6 weeks in the mental health ward in Irvine. So obviously, we don't have an anorexia specific ward or an eating disorder specific ward, but for me, that was probably the best thing that ever happened because I was in there with a lot of people with a lot of really serious mental health issues, people with severe bipolar, personality disorder. And it was quite a scary place to be, like, and it really gave me perspective as well because a lot of these people I ended up actually making friends with, seeing a different side to them, and really starting to kind of feel for them. But it was a bit of a wake-up call to me, and that I was like, I need to get myself out of here, but also need to make sure that I never come back here. Obviously, bearing in mind this was during lockdown as well. So at one point I couldn't even have any visitors. When I could get visitors, it was in like a wee room. We had to have a mask on. We weren't allowed to sit next to each other. So it basically felt like being in prison. And I was like, this is so shit. And that was probably more of a wake-up call than nearly dying. That was probably more of a, right, I need to do something about this moment than being in hospital, in the hospital bed, because that all felt a little bit surreal at the time. I think it all happened so quick that I hadn't really quite processed what had really happened. But anyway, eventually I got out of hospital. Obviously, I was still tiny. I was a lot healthier than when I went in. I went in at 32 kilograms, and I think it was 37 or 38 kilograms when they checked me out of hospital. The full time that I was in hospital, I wasn't allowed to do any exercise. I was put in a wheelchair. I wasn't even allowed to walk from one end of the hospital ward to the other. So for somebody that had exercised their full life, from like I danced from when I was 4 all the way up until I was 17, just after I left school, like I'd swam from the age of like 5, like being so involved in like hockey from about the age of 8. That was like such a big thing to me, for somebody to say, like, we used to go walking every weekend, me and my mum and dad, uphill mountains and things. The exercise was taken away from me as well. That was also a big wake-up call of, right, I'm not allowed to exercise right now, but actually something that I've really valued in my life has turned into something pretty toxic, because at that point I was just moving all the time to burn energy. So that definitely was like a big kick up the bum as well. If you ever want to exercise again, you need to sort this out. So got out of hospital, and then that's probably when I'd say that the real work started, because when I was in the hospital, it was easy. They were turning up with my meals, which were disgusting, and it's actually quite sad to say that one time I actually complained. So bearing in mind that I was at this point, I think about 34 kilograms in hospital with an eating disorder, and I got my dinner one night, and it was supposed to be a lamb stew, and lamb's my favourite. So I was like, right, if I'm going to eat something, at least it's something that I want to eat. And it came, and it was just gravy. There was no meat in it, and I actually had to complain to the nurses and be like, there's no meat in this. Like, what the hell?
And they're
Like,
trying to actually feed you, but like they're trying to get you,
that's not just for me with an eating disorder, because at that point I was like, there's people in here that are trying to get better, because it was obviously a hospital as a whole trying to get better from like lots of different things, and nutrition's so important. I think that's when like lots of wee things just really started clicking. But When I get out of hospital, that's when the real work started because the responsibility was left to me. Obviously, I had Christian there, like his mum and dad, my mum and dad, my friends there to support me. And I'm lucky that I've got a really good support network. And I think a wee bit of me was just like, everybody's watching me. So I'm the kind of person that doesn't like letting people down as well. So as much as sometimes when I was there at home, I didn't want to eat, I was also like, oh, I need to do this for everyone else because they're watching me. I've
Yeah.
committed to this. And I'm the kind of person as well, when I go all in with something, I go all in. So I suppose that worked in my favour as well. But yeah, so worked really, really hard when I came out of hospital with Community Eating Disorder Services. I was with them for a year. They obviously then gave me, like, eventually when I was healthy enough, the go ahead to get back out and walking. Then I got the go ahead to get back into the gym. But at that point, I was only allowed to do strength training. But for me at that point, it was just so exciting because I hadn't been able to do anything at
Yeah.
all. But then when I got discharged from Community Eating Disorder Services, at that point, I realised, okay, I'm 110 times better than what I was this time a year ago when I first got taken in to the eating disorder clinic at the hospital. But at the same time, I knew that I wasn't fully better and that I still needed support. And I think that on a journey of change for anyone, this is a bit that a lot of people don't recognise. People think that they just get to a point and then that's it. And it's like, no, like, it doesn't matter how good you get, the work never ever stops. So at that point, I reached out to a coach, Laura Mullen, and I reached out to Laura Mullen because Laura actually had an eating disorder when she was younger. And I basically just seen her on Instagram and I was like, that girl is a weapon. Like, she has like six pack abs, she's got
Yes.
like mega muscles, she was fit, she was strong, she was everything that I wanted to be. And I was like, and I can relate to her, like, I knew she was going to get me. So I worked with Laura for, I think, a year again. And again, that just changed so much. Even just like wee things, like me and Laura became really good friends. She came down to my house one day. And I always think that you learn a lot through observing other people, just being around other people, like within our coaching business. And you're probably the same, Donna. Like, I always think that even just like the conversations that you have with people, being around good people, really elevates you and allows you to maybe see things differently. So I remember Laura this one particular day coming down to me and Christian's house to go to grow. And at this point, I've been working with Laura for quite a while, and I thought that I was almost like completely like by with it. And I'd almost been like, me, like, I don't even have any
Yeah.
like issues with food anymore. But we were going out to grow, which is a cafe near us, for some brunch. And Laura had come in for a coffee first, and I'd said to her, do you want a biscuit? So here I came through with the biscuit tin, and I picked out the Lotus Biscoff biscuit, being like, well, I'm going to go for my lunch, but I'm having a biscuit. Laura picked out the Kit Kat Chunky, and it just made me go, oh, I couldn't do that. I've still got work to
Yeah.
do. So I think, like, for me then, it was just a constant, like, realization after realization after realization, surrounding myself with good people, putting myself into uncomfortable positions. And then eventually, probably the best thing that ever happened to me was 3 years ago, Christian was training for an Ironman. And at this point, like, I'd never, as I said at school, the one thing that I didn't do was run. And I'd always said that I wasn't a runner, I wasn't into it, I wasn't that good for it. But Christian was training for this Ironman. He kept getting out these long runs and running way too fast and cooking himself. So I went, I'm a shit runner, I don't run, I'll come out to slow you down. Little been known to me that by me being consistent at running through trying to help him, I actually ended up getting really good at it. But the best thing that came for me through running was actually, and it's funny because a lot of people assume that somebody with an eating disorder, that running wouldn't be a good thing for them. It was one of the best things that ever happened to me for my relationship with food, because I started realizing that actually through my running, if I started feeling better, that I could actually control my output and my performance. So for me, my eating disorder, a lot of it wasn't just about how I looked. Like, I didn't like how I looked, especially when I was at my tiniest. But a lot of it was about actually controlling my emotions and my feelings and things that I didn't know how to process. So I suppose you could say that I almost put that energy into like a positive spin there, because I used that then as I was like, right, well, if I actually feel myself better, if I actually can focus on getting enough carbohydrates in around my workout, eating more food, I'm going to be a lot better at running. And
Yeah.
then full circle moment to this day, I've ran three marathons. During my first marathon, I qualified for London Marathon. During London Marathon, I qualified for Boston Marathon. I ran Boston Marathon in April. I recently PB'd my half marathon, ran a 1:27 half marathon. Like, totally have found a passion for running. But I think the reason why I'm probably so passionate about running now is because I can see how much it's actually done for me, not just with my relationship with food, but probably for like my confidence, my resilience, my mindset. Because I go out and runs now, and actually, like, I was running that half, so it was like last weekend that I PB'd my half, or the weekend before that I PB'd my half marathon, and I was running it. I was like, I wish somebody could be in my head right now because I'm being so nice to myself. I was actually running, going, you deserve to be here. You're so good at this. You've got this. And I've got a wee mantra when I'm running. I go, you're fit, you're strong, you're capable, you've got this. But I used to be horrible to myself. Like, I was horrible. I was so hard on myself. And I didn't realize at the time. And looking back, I'm like, I wish I could just go back to that girl and shake and be like, just be a wee bit nicer to yourself and it'll be easier and you'll get better. But running has really helped me to find all of that.
That's
See, that's
incredible. It's
curious.
incredible because I obviously didn't know, like obviously I do know your story because it like you've shared it before, but you would never, if you didn't know your story, like what you've just explained, you would never ever think that you were ever there if you just knew you now. Do you know what I mean? And it's incredible how you've literally went from being in a wheelchair and being forced to not even walk to run marathons and be so passionate about running, and it not being something that's then because of the anorexia, I need this is to keep me lean and this is to keep me, and it's not because of that. Whereas some people could go into that path where it is because of that. Does that make
Yeah,
sense?
and I always say, like, I'm so grateful that I actually found running after having been through all of that, because had I found it before, I'm a big believer that you can change your perspective and you can change your mindset and your outlook and everything. But I think had I found it before, I might not have had that same experience with it being at the other end.
It would be the toxic side, wouldn't it? It would be like become part of the toxicity 100%. And like, obviously, we're going to talk a little bit about how you speak to yourself and stuff like that because it's so crucial with so much of what we do. But again, it just goes to show like when you, before that would have been your shit, you're not good enough, da, 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 and then it's like full circle. You're actually like, it's your proof is in the pudding. Like, by you speaking kindly to yourself, you're doing all these incredible things, which you, little Ailey wouldn't have even dreamed of.
Yeah,
And
it's
not
magical.
little, but like, do you know what I mean? So obviously there's like that, like it's like that, isn't it? It's not been like a straight line. What would you say, what was the actual, because obviously you said there were loads of little kind of dips, what was the turning point? Was there a moment that was like, this is it, or was there just several along the way?
Think several along the way. I don't think I could pinpoint one moment. Like, I remember obviously that point in hospital where that was a big pivotal moment, and then probably the next one after that was getting discharged from the community services and being like, right, this is very good, but you still need support. And then I suppose the next one would have been signing up to work with Laura. And then the next one was kind of sitting in between that. Probably the next one was me and Christian getting our own house, because again, that was a bit of a responsibility of, as much as I was so far removed from that, again, there was still wee bits, wee elements there that it could have been an opportunity for me to quite easily slip back into old habits when there weren't as many eyes there. And then the next one was actually me and Christian coming to Bali for the first time. So the first time that we ever came to Bali, I was at a point where I was a lot more comfortable with eating out for food, because I remember Christian used to go out for lunch with his mum every Wednesday and thinking, thank fuck that I work in a Wednesday. Sorry for swearing. Thank God that
You're
thank God
fine.
I work on a Wednesday, because I don't need to go out for food during the week, because that was just a rule that I wouldn't do. Like, this was me obviously like out of hospital for like a year and a half in a much better spot, but I was like, no, nah, I'll only eat out at the weekend, like, not something that I do. Because Christian always just say, oh, it's a shame that you can't come, and I'd be like, yeah, it's a shame, and secretly I'd be like, glad that I can't come. But when we came away to Bali for the first time, it's so cheap to eat out here, and obviously it was tea, and Christian really wanted to eat out for every meal, and a lot of holidays that we'd been on previously I had ruined, because like we went to Vietnam for a month and I remember just always being in a bad mood about eating out for food, or if Christian suggested going for like a burger or a pizza or something, like I'd be raging, like I'd have to look at all the menus before we went in anywhere. So I remember coming to Bali for the first time and being like, right, you're not that person anymore. If Christian wants to eat out for every meal, it's not that big a deal. Just treat it as though it was a meal that you'd eat in the house. So that's just what I started doing. And that really broke a big barrier for me, to the point that I came back from like that whole month away, hadn't tracked a calorie, hadn't thought about tracking a calorie, went away fearing eating out more than one day a week to coming back, being totally cool with eating out every day of the week, was able to then come back to Scotland and yeah, okay, we didn't eat out for every meal of the week when we came back, but I was able to then start to challenge more, going out midweek for a pizza with my friends or things, and actually just being like, right, just treat it like a meal in the house. It's not that big a deal. And then that was probably one of the best things that ever happened to me after that. And then obviously it was getting into running, and then we signed up to work with our coach John, and that was probably another big pivotal moment because he's instilled a lot of belief in me. There's been a lot of moments where, especially with my running, I've had a lot of doubt, and then just having him there in my corner to back me up has made me be like, right, well, if John thinks you can do it, even if I doubted myself, because that's something that I always struggled with, was belief in myself. And now I'd say that I've got a lot of belief in myself, to the point that I actually sent John a message the other day. We were in Dubai and I was running in the treadmill after the half marathon at the weekend, and I was like, I'm going to run a 3-hour marathon next year. And I said it dead confidently, and I just had this moment in the treadmill of, that was always a want. It was always, I want to run a 3-hour marathon, but I was thinking it'll probably be like 5 years away. To give you perspective, I ran a 3:12:57 at Boston, and it was hard. But when I ran that half marathon at the weekend there, it just opened my eyes up to what I was capable of. And all of a sudden, I was like, where is this like unriveting belief in myself came from? That all of a sudden, I went from before I ran that half marathon being like, oh, I don't know if we'll run it in under 90 minutes. And Christian going, I think you're going to do about 1:27. And I did 1:26:57. He laughs because he always says that whatever he says that I'm going to do, I'll just go and do it. But even right before it, I didn't have that kind of belief in myself. And then I went and did that. And through having other people have belief in me, it then really, really empowered me. But then when I went and I did the thing this time round, I think now I've got so much evidence that I was like, why am I setting that as a goal for 3, 4, 5 years away? Like, why can't I do that next year?
100%. And like you say, it's a constant evolution, isn't it? And like everything's a bit of evidence. Everything's like a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. And then now, like you could go to the moon. Do you know what I mean? Like, and it's incredible though. Then, like you say, it's so important to have that community around you. Do you know? Because you've like articulated so much. Like a lot of my questions that like you've already asked.
Answered them all. I know, because you've asked me, and I'm just like.
No, I love it. I love it. So obviously, like you say, you run marathons, you compete in fitness events, you and Christian do some stuff together as well. And that is a huge transformation in itself. What role has the physical strength played in all of your healing?
Oh, that's a really good question. That's a deep question.
Feel like this whole episode is going to be a bit deep because it is quite a deep topic, isn't it?
Yeah, that is very, very true. The physical, well, I suppose it's in ways been the how it's allowed me to build resilience within myself. So showing up to sessions that I don't think that I can do and doing them, like showing up in days where I don't want to show up or I don't feel like it, outworking the self-doubt. Like all the way through my Boston Marathon prep, we actually had came back here to Bali, and it was the first time that I'd ever trained with that kind of intensity and this kind of heat, and it really knocked my confidence. And at the same time, I started getting a lot of problems with my stomach, which I've now just recently found out that I'm actually intolerant to eggs. And at that same time, when we came to Bali, because we were eating out all the time, I went from eating eggs maybe like once or twice a week when we were going out for breakfast, eating eggs every day, which made it mega, mega bad, and I didn't know. But then obviously, I was eating more food than I was ever eating before, and I was getting leaner, and I was just tired all the time. I was going on runs, and my stomach was getting upset. So, my body obviously wasn't holding on to carbohydrates and obviously nutrients to fuel my run. But then, sticking through all of that and coming out the other end of it and going and running Boston Marathon, like I finished Boston Marathon, and I'm not usually an emotional person, and when I ran over across the finish line, like I cried, because that whole marathon prep had been the hardest prep for anything that I'd ever went through in my life. I experienced so much self-doubt. There were so many times that I wanted to quit. I remember trying to convince Christian that at that point we'd made a bit of a mess up. Christian, we were meant to go to from we were flying from
This was a
Dubai
China
to
thing, wasn't
Germany.
it?
Oh no, so
Was this
that
a
happened
China?
as well. So we
No.
lost money because I missed an email. So we were meant to go to Hyrox in China, and then we couldn't go to China, so that was fine, we were over that. But then we decided we were going to do Hyrox in Germany. When we went to do Hyrox in Germany, we were flying from Dubai to Germany, and Christian booked the flight on the wrong day. So we just made a lot of
Yeah.
like mess ups when it came to money financially. So there was a point where I was having so much doubt in Boston Marathon that I was trying to convince Christian that we didn't need to go because I was going, we can't afford it. But actually, it wasn't anything to do with me even worried about money. It was the fact that I was actually worried whether I could
Limit
do it
belief.
or not. And I suppose the biggest thing was, as much as I put my goal out there online and there was that kind of pressure for that, it was more the fact that I was worried that I couldn't do it and I'd set a target for myself. And it's funny because the target that I set was so big, it was 3:10 and I didn't hit that. But I got an 8 minute PB and when I finished, I was absolutely buzzing. And I was like, if I hadn't set that goal that big in the first place, when I was going through all those hard times in Bali, I wouldn't have pushed as hard and I probably would have gave up. And I think that just shows the importance of setting big goals. But back to your question, I suppose it's not so much physically and like the physically how I look or muscularly or strength, it's more physically in how that's made me a more resilient, more confident, more robust person.
Yeah, absolutely. And having that emotion after the crossing that finish line as well is like, even the fact that you how far you have came, like I said, going from a wheelchair to doing that is like chalk and cheese, more than chalk and cheese. Do you know what I mean? So it's incredible. And we spoke quite a lot about like kind of belief and limiting beliefs. And if you were to go back and think about what some of the beliefs you had and that you had to let go of, and what empowering beliefs have you created instead of, what do you think they would be?
So
No.
many, like where to start? Like so many around about food, like carbs were bad, that I couldn't eat any more than 800 calories on weekdays, that like sweet corn was bad for you. Like honestly, like ridiculous that I had to eat my porridge with protein in the gym before I left the gym. That I couldn't eat before I worked out in the morning, because now I wouldn't even dream of not eating before I work out in the morning. Like I actually can't think of anything worse than doing a workout without having something to eat. I think there's that saying, once you train fueled, you'll never train fasted. And I used to be like, nah, not me. Like that doesn't work for me. I just never tried it and I was scared.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
then doing more stuff like that. I suppose just believing that like I'm as capable as I am. I remember watching London Marathon in the telly when I was probably about 21, 22, and thinking I could never do that. And then to have ran Boston and ran London and qualified for Boston running London, I'm like, how mad is that to think that there was a day where I was telling myself that I could never do that? And now I'm that person that's doing it and doing it really well. Being a business owner, like I remember when I left school. And I had no idea what I wanted to do, but I just always remember thinking I had to go into like an employed job. Like I've had loads of jobs since I left school. I worked in a restaurant.
Shoulds of life, the shoulds, yeah.
Like I studied interior design. I hated it, but it was like you should go and study. When I left school, I wanted to actually do something to do with fitness, and it was like I didn't even do PE at school, but I just loved because it was in the same column as art, and I had to pick between the two, and they were my two favorite
Yes.
subjects. And I picked art, obviously. So I went and done interior design, then it wasn't what I thought it was going to be, didn't enjoy it. I left that to do again, wanted to go and do fitness and love my mum to bits, but my mum was like, it was sports therapy I was looking at, and she went, that's not a real qualification, go and do something real. So I went and done hairdressing, creative, I like talking to people, I like helping people, I loved working in the restaurant, like I loved when I worked in the restaurant, so I was like, it's got that element where it's social, went and done that. And probably looking back, that was another limiting belief because I worked in, so I worked for the Rainbow Room and then I left Rainbow Room and I went and worked in a salon with a girl that I'd worked with in the Rainbow Room. And then we worked together for a couple of months and she had to let me go. She couldn't afford to keep me on. And I remember at the time, one of my really good friends, her cousin has a salon that's really well known. And he was like, come and apply. You need to obviously come and do like a test, but like, I'm pretty sure that you'll do well. He'd worked previously for Rainbow Room. And then I just had so much self-doubt that at the same time, my other best friend had said, oh, she worked for the British Red Cross and she'd said they're looking for a temp staff member just now. I know that you're not working. Why don't you come and work for us whilst you're looking for another job in hairdressing? And you can leave, literally, you can come and work for 2 days and leave the next day if you want, but it'll give you some money in the meantime. But obviously, in their terms, it meant they could tell me I could leave whenever as well. And at the time, I was like, right, okay. And then I got there and I was like, this is quite cushy. It's like 8 till 4, 9 till 5. I get weekends off because in the salon, we worked Saturdays. when I'd worked for Rainbow Room, we worked Sundays as well. It was late nights, long hours. I was like, oh, this is good. I get my weekends. At that point, me and Christian were quite into partying as well, so it was convenient. And probably I was a bit out of my comfort zone with going and actually like having that confidence to go and trial at another salon, which is mad. And I think back to when I worked for Rainbow Room, I won Newcomer of the Year. I was the quickest ever qualifying assistant. I'd done hair backstage at Tea in the Park. But that was a lot of like self-doubt that I had. And when I look back now, I'm like, if I was the person that I was now, I probably would still be hairdressing. But I'm glad that I had all that self-doubt because I wouldn't be in Bali. I wouldn't probably be doing any of this stuff that I'm doing right now. So I believe that like I had to go through
Yes,
all of that.
absolutely.
That was a
Absolutely,
big.
because it's like everything happens for a reason, isn't it? And everything's like the path is designed, and how you've turned out is how you've turned out because of all these things. Do you know what I mean? And there'll be so many people, this isn't a question, but there's like obviously I know certain people who have joined your program because of your story, because they resonate so much with your story. And that's powerful. Like that's impact. That's like creating huge impact on people from a real like soul core like place. It's like so emotional. It's so emotional. So being able to use what's happened to you or with you or for you and seeing it as for you because it's actually shaped your path. Do you know what I mean? And it's incredible that you can now use it for good, even though it was a horrible place to be in that moment. Do you know what I mean? So looking back, what did younger Ailey need to know that you now know to be true?
That's a good question as well. I suppose just don't be so hard on yourself. Like, you don't have to have it all figured out. Like, I remember as well being like, what age was I when I gave up hairdressing? Maybe 22, and stepping into working with the British Red Cross and being so hard on myself of, all right, this is like the third or fourth, if you count the restaurant, like career that you've had. You're 22. What if it doesn't work out? And then when I was finishing up, so when I worked for the Red Cross, I started a degree with them because I was kind of like, well, what's the next thing? Like, this isn't a, I liked it, but I was like, this isn't a forever job in terms of like, it's, there's no progression financially, like, no real fulfillment in it after you've done it for a couple of months. Like, it's quite boring and tedious. And I'd kind of asked them, like, how do I kind of go further with this? And they'd actually help me to get signed up to a business degree. So I started doing a business degree, which I hated. And it's ironic because I've obviously got a business now. But actually running your own business versus studying business at university when you're talking about big corporate business are two totally different things. But yeah, so I studied business for 2 years. And then me and Christian, when we bought our house, I was painting this piece of furniture. I did a few days off, and I did like a like brought back to life loads of pieces of old furniture that we'd bought. And I was having such a good time. And Christine's mum came into the kitchen. I can't even remember the question that you asked me or why I started telling you this story, but it'll come back to me.
Back to it, yeah. I'll ask it again. You keep going.
Yeah, they were in the kitchen. I was in the kitchen doing up this furniture, and they came in, and I was just like at them, and they came in. Would you think I was mad? I quit uni, and straight away his mum went, yeah. And then Christian was like, no, just quit. Like, you know what he's like? He's like, if you're happy, just quit. Like, what's the point? His mum was like, oh, but it was a 3-year degree. So his mum was like, you've only got another year and you'll have your degree. And then you can leave because it was 4 years and you get your honours. And Christian was like, no, what's the point? Like, you're never going to use it. Just quit. It's making you unhappy. So at that point, but then I started having all these thoughts of, right, okay, I'm now at this point, I think I was 20. So I've been coaching for 3 years. 26. 25, 26, depending on how it fell with my birthday. And I was like, right, this is something else that you've tried. Like, what if you go and do something else and it doesn't work out? So I gave up the degree, but I kept working for the Red Cross for like another 6 months, just kind of pondering what I wanted to do. And Christian one day said to me, why don't you start coaching? And at this point, I was doing some bits in the background for his business, helping him out, as well as working for the Red Cross. And I went, but that's your thing. And he went, Ailey, don't be stupid. Like, you love the gym. And I was like, what I said that I wanted to do way back when I finished up interior design. And he was like, go and do it, I'll pay for your PT course. So I went, did my PT qualification, starting my business, and the rest was history. But I think back to your question, I think your question was, what did younger
Employ the
Ailey?
younger Ailey. Need to know that you know now.
I was, you don't have to have it all figured out. Like, I felt like I had to be at a certain place by a certain age, and I had all these expectations and pressures on myself. And it's so funny because as I've got older, I've really started to realize that you don't, like, nobody's got it all figured out, to the point that, like, me and Christian have been together for 9 years, and I know I just said that he proposed to me at the weekend, but I was so in shock because we've been together for so long that, like, it hadn't even crossed my mind. But I remember being in, like, my late teens, early 20s, being like, I need to get married and get the house, and now I've given up my house and I'm living out a suitcase. And I was totally caught off guard by Christian proposing to me, because I was like, oh, we've been together for so long, like. And it's so funny how, like, that can change so much. And that's probably why I ended up in the pickle that I was in, because I was living life as a million and one different people. I was the party girl, the gym girl, the serious girl at work that had her shit together, that was on top of her nutrition, that was super healthy. And then at the weekend, I was this, like, wild person. But then I had all these ideas of where I should be in, like, career, where I should be in buying a house, getting a mortgage. And it was all stuff that I didn't really want. So I suppose it would be just go and do what you want, because now I'm 30 and I'm doing what I want and everything's so much better.
Exactly. And you know, it's actually that's kind of threaded through every single person that I spoke to, is that whole shoulds thing, like living under a pressure of what other people think your life should look like, rather than it just being like, what do I want? Who am I? Like, what lights me up inside? And it just goes to show that every single person that I'm speaking to is living a life aligned with who they are and what they want, and that is like the like underlying theme, like, of everybody I've spoke to, and they're happy, and they're so much happier in the place that they are now to the place that they were once upon a time, which is like, that's what you want. You want happiness, contentness. Like, what more could you actually get out of life is being happy and content? Do you know what I mean? So coaching and connection have been big parts of your journey, and I've obviously worked for you for a period of time when I was in RFA. How important, and you've touched on this already, but how important is it to have people around you who believed in your potential? And you've obviously spoke about this, but
So important, like, from the get-go. Like, I was obviously so lucky that I had such a good best friend. Like, I had Christian, who was, like, the most supportive partner ever, like, all the way through from, like, my journey through my eating disorder to telling me to quit uni and being like, just quit, like, I'll pay for your PT course. Like, my mum and dad, Christian's mum and dad are great as well. Like, the coaches that I've had in my corner over the years, Laura Mullen, John Wynn, who's now still my coach. John's actually a ex-addict, and part of the reason why I wanted to work with John is because I was like, okay, it's a different type of mental health disorder, but I knew that he would get me. It's like eating is still an addiction. And John very much gets me. He knows how to push me, he knows the right things to say to me. And I think just always having, like, I said to Christian a few weeks ago, I went, I can't imagine my life without John. Like, I can't imagine not having a person of influence outside of my close knit network there as well to support me, because I think it's important you've got those people that are close to you. And I'm lucky that I've got a lot of people that are close to me that will be very honest with me as well. But I also think it's good to have someone from the outside looking in to just give you a different perspective as well. And I'd say that that's probably been one of the best things in my journey. Like, even the nurses that I had in hospital, like, some of them still follow me on Instagram, and I get some nice messages. Me and Christian get engaged the other day, and I was thinking, like, that must be so nice for them to see. But then it reminds me as well, and, like, the work that I'm doing, when we see people and they've been through, like, a massive journey, like, how that makes you feel as well.
And there's a lot to be said for like serving people, and effectively, even though it's a business and you're being paid to do it, like, there's so much fulfillment in serving, isn't there? And like we're designed to be serving. Do you know what I mean? And it's a beautiful experience to be part of that. So you and Christian are like the power couple, like, for sure. And obviously I've seen you guys, I've known you guys for a long time now, like, and you can see like how you will use work together. How has that partnership supported both your personal healing and your professional success?
Massively. Like, I don't believe that I would be where I'm now without Christian. Like, Christian's always had so much belief in me. Like, he's always just thought that, like, the sun shines out my bum. But in a way, not in a, like, soppy way, but in a very, like, empowering way, that, like, He's just been like, no, like you can do that. He's been very encouraging, where I've always had a lot of like self-doubt. He's just been like, nah, like he also won't take like anything if I'm like feeling stressed about something. Like he just, you know what Christian's like. He's very much the kind of person to tell you how it is. And even
Lovely.
Ruby, fiance, like he'll still tell me exactly how it is as well. So like he has been such a big influence in my life, and I always say that I would have never have had the belief to do half the stuff that I was doing if it wasn't for having Christian in my corner.
Absolutely, 100%. And obviously today you're living life that so many people would only dream of. Like, and traveling, your business, your health, your freedom, because it creates a lot of freedom as well. What does like life by design, because effectively that's what you're living your life by design. What does that mean to you?
Supposed to mean it just means doing things on your term. I think you need to really know yourself, and you need to really know who you are as a person, what you want to get out of life, what makes you tick. And when you know that, then you can start making decisions based in line with the things that you really want. Like I know that I love being in the sunshine. It just makes me so much happier. So I know that like I have to be in a warm country now. And Christian's actually the same. So we're very lucky that we have a lot of very, very similar values, to the point that we've made a pact that we're probably never going to come back to Scotland for any longer than 3 weeks at a time. We've
Really?
already spoke about buying a house in Cyprus because we want to just live somewhere where it's warm. I'm like, I value wearing shorts all the time. I don't like wearing trousers. I don't want to live in a country where I have to wear trousers.
Yeah.
Like, we silly things like that. But I suppose it's like everybody's different. Like you don't have to want to live abroad and travel the world. If you're a homebird, like that's fine. If you want to live next door to your mum and dad, or your brother or sister, or your best friend, then why not? But make sure that you're making that decision from a place of because you want it, and not because you feel that you should. Like
Yeah.
I always thought that I wouldn't want a big white wedding, and now that I've got engaged, I'm like, actually, I think I want a big wedding, because actually, I quite like a big party and a celebration, and I've got loads of friends and people that I want to invite.
Yeah.
And that's only came through like me really exploring and getting to know myself, because there was a part of me when I was younger that used to party because I thought I should and because I wanted to be seen to do it. So then I always kind of was like, oh, maybe actually the whole wedding thing is more because I think that I should do it. But now that it's came around, I'm like, no, I really want that. Like, I want
No.
that. And it's just
And
making sure that.
there you go.
The
I was just going to say it's empowering to know who you are, like, and really know who you are. And I was saying most of society probably don't know who they are, and they're just living. Do you know when you speak to people and they go, "How you doing?" I'm just plodding along. I'm like, "No, don't do that. Don't
conversation
plod
killer.
along." Yeah. That's not plod along. It's like find something more to life. And like you say, that like everybody isn't the same. We're all so unique and so different. And but like that, like when you can actually live your life like in your own way, the way you want to live it, it's so freeing. It's so powerful. It's so like there's so much to be said for that, whatever that looks like for you. Like do it. Don't care about what other people think. Don't care about like you say, you don't need to know it. You don't need to know everything that's going on, and you don't need to know what's coming next, whatever. But like, do it because it feels right.
Yeah, and I think that's probably one of the best things that I ever did, was just stop caring so much about what other people, not just what other people think, but what other people were doing as well,
Yeah.
because I was so caught up in what other people were doing that I was like, should I be doing that? And you hear so many people wanting to like jump to the next thing, or even we get it a lot inside of the program with like running. Like people start running because they see other people running and they're like, oh, I'm going to do a half marathon. Then they start doing it and they don't actually enjoy it because they haven't done it through a place of actual want, or they
Why
haven't
am I
found any
doing this?
passion from it. It's more a case of, it's the same with like big events. It's the same with, it was like me with the bodybuilding thing. I was doing it because I thought that I should do it rather than because I wanted to. And when you do something through doing it because you think you should do it rather than because you actually want to do it, then it will spit you out and chew you up, and you'll not have a nice experience, and then it'll leave you with a bad taste in your mouth of that thing. Whereas if you do it from a place of because you want to do it, and not because you want to be seen to be doing it, or because anyone else is doing it, it's a totally different mindset and approach that you're going to have towards it. So you're going to have a very different outcome.
Absolutely. What are some of the biggest lessons that you've learned about creating this life that feels aligned rather than one that looks good on the outside?
It's still stressful.
Okay.
I just thought, if you
Life
do what
is
you want,
life.
it'll be easy. But life's always hard. Like, it doesn't matter if you're doing the shit that you want to do, or like You're back in Scotland sitting in the cold, wishing that you were lying on a beach. Like, it's still hard. Like, if you want good things in life, you have to work really hard, and there's always going to be ups and downs. Life's always going to throw stuff at you. But at least if you're doing it on your terms, you get to choose your hard. Like, being at the other side of the world in an 8-hour time difference, running an online business whilst your clients are predominantly in the UK, is hard. Being 8 hours away from your family is hard. When we first came out here, like when we put our house up for rent, and obviously we were so excited about it, and then we got here, and when we've been in Dubai for 2 weeks first, and Christian met up with a couple of friends that he had in Dubai, but I didn't really know anyone in Dubai. We'd met our friends Lewis and Amy for a night, but apart from that, it had literally just been like me and Christian. But he'd been going out and doing podcasts, meeting friends, and my phone also wasn't working, so when he was out, I couldn't leave the apartment. We were lucky we had a gym downstairs, but that was it. I was literally in the apartment block in the gym. So I did 2 weeks kind of just doing that and hanging about with Christian. Then we came out to Bali and we were jet lagged. We were tired, and it's first world problems, right? It's not like the world, but I remember being in this cafe next door to the villa. We'd been there for one day. Me and Christian just pure falling out, me being like, I'm getting home, I'm not doing this. This is so shit. But it's like, it was something new. It was unknown. Like, as human beings, we crave normality, we crave routine, we crave structure, we crave stability, and all of those things, as much as that was what I wanted, all of those basic human needs at that point had been pulled away from my feet. And now, through me having lived this life for so long, I've found ways and new environments to very quickly build structure, routine. Like, wherever we go, we'll always have granola, banana, and yogurt as one of our kind of staple breakfasts, because it's normal, it's easy. Like, we'll still try and do our workouts at the same time. The gym actually like creates a lot of consistency when we've got a lot of instability when we're moving about. We've also now realized that actually running a business the way that we're running a business, we can't be changing environments and spaces every single week. We need to stay places for 2 or 3 months at a time. So we've learned a lot of lessons along the way, but I suppose back to your question is just that whatever path you choose in life, it's going to be hard. So make sure that you're choosing the path that you want to go down.
Yes, absolutely, 100%. So if somebody was listening to this right now and was struggling with all the things, the kind of things you struggle with, be that food, body image, self-worth, lack of belief, what would you say to them?
Tell somebody. Doesn't matter who it is, just talk to somebody about it, because I kept it to myself for years. I kind of, my best friend Carly, I kind of like made wee comments to her, and but I never really fully was like, no, I am really struggling right now. I always just kind of thought, I'll wake up tomorrow and tomorrow will be different, and it wouldn't be. And it wasn't until I finally said the words out loud of like, I need help, like this isn't good, that I was able to then start actually instigating change. Because when it's all in your head, it's not real, and as soon as you say it out real out loud, it makes it real.
Do you know when as soon as you said tell somebody I get goosebumps all the way up my arms? It's so true though, isn't it? When it's like you said, when it's in your head, it's just it's like a you're living in your own wee world, and it's not real. There's no actual realness to it at all. And it's only when you actually like say it out loud or speak to somebody or and it becomes real, and then you can actually do something about it when it becomes real.
Yeah, and the reason why most people don't say something is because they're embarrassed about it. But the
Or
more that you
shame, or there's something
know that,
there
the more that
that.
I started to open up about it, the more that other people would open up and tell me their experiences and things that they'd been through. And it's on different levels as well, especially when it comes to your relationship with food. Like, people just think that it's rock bottom, like hearing about me being in hospital and being 32 kilograms in ICU. I struggled with that for years up to that point where I was hospitalized. And if anything, that point in hospital was probably the best point, because that allowed me to instigate the change. But I lived with that in my head, unknown. Like, I've got pictures where I still had an eating disorder, but nobody knew, or nobody out with me. A few like people that maybe suspected it. Like, I think my mum probably suspected it. At some points, Christian said he had kind of moments, and then I would convince him otherwise. But like, out with that, like, it was all in there. And that's the thing with mental health. Like, you might physically look okay, but if inside you're crippled, then like, it doesn't matter. Like, the inside and outside have to match up. And I think
Absolutely.
that's probably the hardest thing when it comes to like food. Like, people just think, oh, it's not that bad. Like, I'm not as ill as the next person, or you have to be at that certain point. It's like, you don't. If you're struggling on any level, like, do something about it. Food's like a relationship. It's like any other relationship. You need to keep
Yeah.
working on it. If you didn't text your partner for 3 months, then you wouldn't be in a relationship anymore. It'd be shit.
100%, and it's like you say, it is an addiction, it is a mental health a situation, and like other addictions, you can just not just I say that like as if it's all, you can just not do it, but obviously that's not, it's there's so much more to it than that. But with food, you can't just abstain. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like something you need to learn to live with. So there's so much in that. Like you say, with the relationship, like I've obviously been through a massive journey in relationship with food as well. But it's like ever evolving, ever growing, it's ever changing, because that's part and parcel of any relationship, like you say. For
Yeah.
sure. So what's next for you personally, aesthetically, professionally? What's next? Apart from getting married.
Planning a wedding, it's probably not going to be till 2027. We've decided that because we do want to have a bigger wedding than what we initially thought, that we don't want to put any pressure on ourselves. We want to buy a house in Cyprus. We want to enjoy this time whilst we're traveling as well. So that probably won't be till 2027. So here in Bali for another 2 months, we've got a couple of nights in Thailand with Christian mum and dad, and then we've not decided what we're going to do. We might stay in Southeast Asia, we might go to South America. So two opposite ends of the world. What else? I have obviously messaged John about wanting to run a sub-3 hour marathon next year. Professionally, me and Christian just want to take Ready for Anything to the moon. We've obviously recently taken on board Carly, as a third coach inside of the program. She is amazing. So yeah, just taking Ready for Anything to the moon.
It's so exciting. It's so exciting to see everything, to see the growth of everything. Because obviously I was in Ready for Anything before it was Ready for Anything. So even
Budget level.
seeing the progression, I have seen the progression in that is huge. But again, it's like all these little baby steps you have both took, first of all, in different directions, kind of, and then coming together and then building it. And it's just amazing. It's just amazing to see the growth in both of you, like both professionally and personally. So this is a question I ask everybody, and it's probably my favorite question because it is a wee bit of a deep one. I love a wee deep question. If you could go back and tell your younger self one thing, what would it be?
Oh, just one thing. Probably stop worrying about everything so much. Just roll with it a wee bit more. Like, it'll all work out in the end. The stuff that feels bad, like something that I'll say to myself now, whenever anything doesn't go to plan or feels like the worst thing in the world, I'll always say to myself, this is teaching me something. Like, this was meant to happen. Where I used to be the kind of person that, like, any wee silly thing happened and I would be like an eruption of emotion. I'd be upset, I'd be crying, I'd be anxious. Like, I remember having a panic attack about not knowing what to wear in a night out, and now I'm like, I live out of a suitcase, I own like three pairs of shoes, all my pants have got holes in them, to the point that we were home at Christian's mum's. This is so embarrassing. We were home at Christian's mum and dad's, and she was like binning my pants off the washing line. Because we're living out a suitcase now and I pure grudge buying stuff, but I'm like, living this life has made me so unmaterialistic as well. And I suppose that may be another thing. Stop getting so caught up in things and just enjoy, like, just enjoy life. Yeah.
It's so beautiful. Thank you so much for joining me. That is such a lovely, powerful episode. I'm so grateful for you being so vulnerable, because it is real and it's raw and it's honest, and that's what people need to hear. Like, they need to hear the rawness of things and the emotion of things and the truth of things, so is it like that they can relate so much more to that. So where can people find you? I'm obviously going to link all your stuff, but let me know where people can find you. I forgot to do this for Christian, so at least if they find you, they'll find him too.
So I'm at ales.readyforanything on Instagram, and Christian.readyforanything on Instagram, and he also has a YouTube channel, which is Christian, I think it's KRISCHIN, but if you search Christian Hill, or it might be The Christian Hill, he might have changed it a wee while ago. It's like an old YouTube that he's had for years that he's just never actually updated, but if you type in Christian Hill to YouTube, he'll be one of the first ones that comes up.
Yeah, there's not many Christian Hills, I don't imagine.
Hopefully the
You'll soon be Ailey Hill. How does that feel?
a bit weird.
I love it. Right. Thank
was like,
you
I can't
so
wait for a
much.
wee short name.
I know it's quite short compared to your second name just now, isn't it? Like from a what is it they used to do, the syllables? Right, that thank you so much for joining us today. If you want to get in touch with any of us, just drop us a message, follow Ailey, and have a magical day. Thank you so much. Bye.